The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Curtis Bowers, welcome to the Fearless Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Curtis, let's start out by maybe you could just give us a little bit of your background and, you know, what you're currently doing, and then we can go from there.
Sounds good. Well, I was raised in a solid Christian family. My mom and dad were engaged in what was going on in the culture and in politics and everything. So kind of been raised to be active and speaking and standing for the truth and everything. Ended up going through college and everything, getting married and starting to have children. And some interesting turn of events happened where I ended up being appointed to be a state representative in Idaho by the governor, and it was just an interesting turn of events, not something I had pursued at all, but I could tell it was what God wanted me to do. And so as I entered that arena there, never having been in politics before, I started to really notice a lot of things my parents had taught me when I was younger. I could see it happening even in Idaho, which at that time, about 15 years ago or so, was the most conservative state in the nation, hands down. But I could see, for some reason, even in the legislature there, when we had an 85% majority of the House, 85% of the Senate, and the governor, we couldn't get a piece of Republican legislation through to save your life. And I started to realize, okay, something is going on here. And as I dug in and studied and realized the purposefulness behind the things that we've all seen happen to our country, that's when God started to stir my heart. And I thought, people need to understand this. And I ended up making a documentary film. I'd never made one before, didn't know anything about filmmaking or anything, but we made it as a family, kind of a homeschool project. It ended up winning a huge film festival in Texas. And over the next few years, over 25 million people watched it online. And we had hundreds of thousands of showings of that film in people's homes all over America. We had about 1,000 plus showings every week in different cities of America for about 3 straight years in a row. And people would come and sign up to do that in their homes or churches. The film's name was Agenda, Grinding America Down, and it kind of took off, and then I started to get invited to places to speak, and so we traveled as a family, ended up making also a sequel to that in 2016, but that's what got me really engaged in realizing I can no longer just understand the times, but I also need to be part of the solution to the problem by educating others in whatever way that is available to me. And then about 5 years ago, my son-in-law and I realized so many people on our side, as they continue to wake up, which is wonderful, and they continue to be concerned about what's going on, which is wonderful, they still are confused by all the mixed messaging that's out there. I mean, there's just the contradicting narratives from Fox News. One show will say this, the next show says something different, and people are in confusion. So we thought, wait a minute, we're going to start something where we together go through all the news each week, newsletters, podcasts, everything we can find, and then summarize it all down in an email we send out on Friday nights. It's called agendaweekly.com. And we send out a news brief. Here's all the key news things that happened this week. Here's some good news things you might not heard about. And then we have prayer and action items, things you can pray about, things you can do. And then I make a video on a particular topic that I think is important for people to understand. And that's what goes out to our subscribers. Those videos are also available on all the different podcast platforms and on Rumble, where I think you've watched those there. But so agendaweekly.com, that's kind of what that I've been doing the last 5 years to continue this process of doing my best to speak truth and share it with others so that our side will continue to gain momentum in understanding, so we're not susceptible to believe all the lies that are floating around out there. And God's blessed me with 9 children too, which was a great motivator for me, because I realized long ago, if we don't change direction, if we don't get off the road we're on, we're going to get to where we're heading. And from my study the last 30, 40 years, it is a communist Marxist future that they want to take us into, totalitarian, with technocracy kind of controlling the grid. And I don't want that for my children and grandchildren, if at all possible. So I'm praying that God will bless my efforts.
Well, that's why I appreciate your information. You give a true Christian perspective. You know, with all this awakening and what's going on, we see a lot of people parroting Christian ideas. They will even quote scripture and different things, but their version of who God is and what is going on is it's not the God of the Bible. So I definitely appreciate a Christian perspective and kind of slicing through the noise and consolidating it. And that's all we try to do here on our channel and through the podcast is demonstrate truth. You know, we're a family of eight, and we have a little like homestead deal, and we have a website and we sell homestead products. But we realize the exact same thing. Like, if we don't become proactive and not just bring attention to what's going on, you know, obviously, if you have the freedom of speech and you say nothing or you passively just let it happen, what difference does it make? It's not important. If you have nothing to say and you're not willing to say it and then stand on it and live by it and not just be pragmatic and blow with the wind, what's the point of all of it? We've been given much to be stewards over. It's the same thing like when we raise and train our children, and part of our homeschooling is entrepreneurism. Like, if you have the opportunity to create and to do and to build, and you're not doing that, like, not only are you squandering the opportunity, you're being a very terrible steward of what you've been given. And obviously, if you build on that, it can grow and improve and get better. So yeah, I greatly appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate your information. Is that documentary available online?
Yes, you can rent it or buy a digital copy at Amazon.com, okay. Or we have physical copies at agendadocumentary.com for those. We have some books that go along with them if you're interested in those things. It's a wonderful tool, even if you know most of what's in it, but most people don't. I get emails every day, almost, people that are even into what's going on, and they go, when we saw your documentary, all of a sudden, all the pieces of the puzzle came together. I go back 100 years and start at Karl Marx's death in 1883 and show you the infiltration and perversion of all the different institutions of influence, where they knew if they hijacked those, then they could change us from within as a people. So then we would want the evil socialist Marxist things they're selling. They would need to push it on us. We'd go, yeah, yeah, we want that. And they said, not only will they want it, but they will need it, because they knew as they broke down the morality and the family and the church and the influence and everything, people would not be capable of taking care of themselves. And that's kind of the end game. And we see a generation rising up right now where you see, wow, they've been very successful creating people that really maybe don't have the character or morality to even take care of themselves, to get up at 6 o'clock for the job or whatever it might be. So, but that's what the films go into. And they just, it's the 30,000 foot view, but in 90 minutes, you have a full education where you go, okay. And then you can invite people over to your house to watch that movie. And then instead of giving them 10 books to read or whatever, which they don't do, that's why I made a movie, because I realized so many people are too busy today to read or do whatever, but they're not too busy to watch a film. And so anyway, we've been grateful for all the people God has sent our way to have showings in their homes, hundreds of thousands of people. And it's been a great blessing.
Yeah. And that's why I wanted to have you on. I was watching an interview with you and Patrick Wood, and Patrick Wood's another guy that I definitely appreciate his Christian perspective and the stuff that he's been covering for 30 plus years now. And I think it was in that video, in the intro, you had mentioned about homemaking and the homemaker and how that's been deconstructed. And that's what I thought we could talk about. I did a two-part kind of series on fearless fatherhood. But the complementary part to that, fearless fatherhood is impossible without a wife that is there to complement, support, fulfill, and do all the rest of the other things that's required so that you can be a fearless father. So I thought we could talk about how feminism has deconstructed the home, what that process has kind of looked like over time. And it's completely infiltrated Christianity, even through theological concepts like Lilith and Shekinah, the way that they've created God, like this idea of Shekinah is this feminine aspect of God. And even through all that, through textual criticism and a changing of the text where they have feminized these masculine words, right, that clearly defined who God was and how they've deconstructed God like that. And then it's infiltrated through liberation theology and all these other things to build an entire construct where they have made Christianity communistic and socialistic.
Yes. Their masters, the Marxist communist, is a master at becoming all things to all people. Whatever you're into, they're going to be into, not because they care about it, but they want to utilize the energies of your life in pushing their agenda forward. So they'll package it where it sounds like, well, Jesus was for this welfare program. Oh, really? And so they'll get you involved in these social justice programs that aren't to help the poor. They're to enslave the poor in entitlements so they will be permanent voters for this system of expanding government or whatever it may be. But yeah, feminists specifically, ladies that are listening to this, it's not a movement that was well-intentioned, a movement that was wanting to set you free and give you a meaningful, purposeful life. It was the exact opposite. It was a movement that wanted your position because they knew a woman that is at home being a helpmeet to her husband and raising the next generation is perhaps the most powerful position in the entire world. The person that is raising the next generation, that's more power than anybody. And they knew that. So back in the 1930s, a group called the Frankfurt School, that my movie gets into, from Germany, it was a group of communists. They came to America, and they were brought to America, an interesting side note, by John Dewey, who's the father of our modern educational system. You wonder why it's rotten. It was supposed to be. It was supposed to just create cogs in the socialist machine. And that's John Dewey's words, who is the founder of our schools system. But he brought these communists, because he loved the communists, to America in the 1930s from Germany. And they had many plans to make us immoral, so it would kind of collapse society, to get rid of the family, and where the state could take over everything so they could have their socialist utopia. But one of the things they talked about, one of the essays I wrote or read, was we want to start creating as much inflation as we can, but where they don't notice it. So at some point here in the future, the women will have to work whether they want to or not. That's 1932. That's how evil these people are. They're plotting and planning in back rooms. How can we get the mother? And you know what they said, men, this will be sobering to you. You know what they said, the way they were going to get men to not notice when their children had been stolen? They said, we're going to try to create a culture of sport where every man is so obsessed with these fictitious battles, they won't notice when we steal their children. That's 1932, the Frankfurt School. Well, that they kept working on that. And of course, look at the sports world today compared to then. There's something you can watch 24 hours a day if you wanted to, and which many men do, which is a tragedy. Then in the 1960s, there was a lady named Betty Friedan, and she wrote the most famous book on feminism ever written. It's called Feminine Mystique. And in that book, it's pure poison. She wrote as if she was just a discontent homemaker herself, and she really suggested women, forget the idea of having children and having a family. Go out and have a meaningful life, working in the world like men do, acting like that was the paradise they've been looking for. And unfortunately, that book persuaded tens of millions of women to leave their families or to never get married to begin with and go try to pursue fulfillment in a career. And it's sad to me because many of those women then waked up in their 40s and 50s and realized they'd been lied to. But it was too late because you can't go back in life. You can't undo and redo. You have this precious amount of time to do what's most important. And they had forsaken that. And many of them written incredible essays on their regrets of doing that today. But it later came out, which is interesting to me, because I've really studied the communist movement and their penetration to America is one of my main things. It came out later that Betty Friedan, even in college, had written essays just idolizing Stalin. Joseph Stalin, who killed over 20 million of his own people, was one of her heroes. So she had written that book, not because it was true. She had written it to do her part for the communist cause of breaking down the family structure in America. And so, again, that movement came up through the 60s and 70s and 80s. And so many women, and they were brainwashed into believing, too, you know, killing your own child, that's part of being free and being fulfilled and being liberated and stuff. And it was all a lie. And one of the people that was a genius of strategy that kind of outlined a lot of this was Vladimir Lenin, who was the founder of the Soviet Union. And he said, back in the 1920s, he said, the best way to control the opposition is to lead it ourselves. Think about that. And that's what's happened to all the institutions of influence. That's what's happened to the church today, like you were talking about. They started in earnest back in the 1930s, penetrating all of the seminaries and American divinity schools, because they knew if we go in, get our degree, and then stay on and be the professors, we could start pushing the church our direction. Because they really admired the church, the energy of the church, the motivations of the church. They thought, if we can harness that energy, oh my goodness, we can accomplish so much. And they have in so many ways today, where they've hijacked the real gospel for the social gospel, and they've got all of these useful idiots, and that's not me being derogatory of them. That's what Lenin called them. All the people will suck in to our schemes, we'll call them useful idiots. We will use them to destroy themselves, but they won't know what we're doing. But again, they knew a healthy, strong biblical family where the father is leading, the wife is following, they're both nurturing, loving, raising, mentoring, discipling those children, they have no hope of accomplishing their communist utopia. And so they had to do what they could to break those things down. And it's been a battle ever since. But that's what's, in a nutshell, what's been happening the last 100 years.
Yeah. And what's interesting is my wife and I, we both went to government schools. Then we both went to college. My wife actually graduated with a degree and started a career and all these things. And I was kind of trying to find myself, I guess, for a lack of a better word, like what I was going to do for income and all these different things. 11 years ago, when we had our first son, my wife's like, well, I would really like to be at home and raise our son. So we made that decision. And then 11 years ago, we decided to relocate. And so we moved to Texas. And before we moved, I said, you know, the temptation is going to be there. You have a degree, you can make a lot of money. And the temptation is going to be there, like as we reboot and start from nothing, in order for us to provide and do all this stuff, you know, the temptation is going to be there for you to go back to work and use your degree and all these different things. And I said, you know, whatever we do, we're not going to do that. Because during that time, through studying scripture, and, you know, I came across the passage that women are to be keepers at home, that the word of God be not blasphemed, you know, and I know that there's translations out there that change that and say keepers of the home. So this way they can complementarian and egalitarianly include that, you know, and work around it. But it became our conviction that if a woman, besides the fact that if a woman is a keeper at home, she can be so incredibly productive in abundance, whether it's with training the children and then working with the children to produce abundance, you know, whether you're on a homestead or whether you have a family business or something like that. But that if a woman is outside of where she was created to be, it blasphemes the word of God. And, you know, you don't hear anybody talking about that today because it's incredibly not popular, to say the least. But, you know, we made that decision 11 years ago, and the Lord has been gracious and very faithful to us to continue. We moved with three children. He blessed us with three more children. And, you know, we just stood by that in faith, and God has blessed it. And, you know, it is our goal to demonstrate that so that many think that it's impossible. It's impossible to raise a family. And certainly, you know, they think it's impossible to raise one child on a single income, but it's still possible only by the grace of God today, between, you know, the destruction of our monetary policy and the hyperinflation, so that they force both husband and wife into the workforce so that they can tax everybody instead of just having one taxpayer. And it's been such a rich blessing for my wife to stay at home and to do all the home economics. Like, they're actually, even in government schools, there used to be a home economics class, and that's completely gone in exchange for this egalitarian, complementarian, you know, we're both going to work, and then when you get home, you can help me do the dishes and the laundry because you love me, you know, and if you don't do that, you're mean or whatever. And it really has been a really long play here to deconstruct the home, deconstruct the family, create competition within the home, where you have husbands and wives competing with each other. You have husbands and wives in churches voting against, they have the ability to vote against each other. They have the ability, I'll be very controversial, they have the ability to vote against each other in the voting booth and all these different things, which is diametrically opposed to the created order. And, you know, and now what do we have? Well, now we need to not let women, we need to not let men compete in women's sports. And my question is why are there women's sports? Like, you're looking, you're trying to correct the symptom, and you're ignoring the problem. And the problem is that there's women's sports, you know. So, but this is all part of this deconstructive process. And it's so interesting. A lot of the conclusions that you've drawn is things that I've been saying for the last 15 years or so, of just the way that society has been rebuilt in this age of Aquarius, this androgynous, you know, image, and they've been able to put Christian stamps on all these things to the point now that we have pastrixes and all this other stuff. And you have all these theologians explaining about, you know, the Bible doesn't prohibit women from pastoring and preaching and all these different things. And I mean, that's a lot to unpack. I mean, that's a really long conversation.
Yeah. Well, it's crystal clear in there. It says a woman is to be silent in the church, not because she doesn't have tremendous value. We know from the Bible, women have more value than men. That's why it's noble when a man, if it took five men to save one woman's life, everyone would say, oh, wonderful. You protected the lady. So it's not that the world tries to act like it's a value system. No, women are more valuable than men, but there's different roles to be played. And so we are to allow them to be the queen of the castle, where they are, you know, at home in a safe environment with their own children, dictating what they're going to cook and what they're going to do. And then many wives then with that time, as the kids get a little bit older, and I'm sure you all will do this, or probably already doing this with your homesteading, then she starts to manage the kids as they get more productive in what they're doing. So she has her own business going at home, whether it's for financial or just foods you're producing, or managing the chores and things to take care of the property God has given you, or whatever you may have. And I would have been so unsuccessful in my life if my wife hadn't been a stay-at-home mom, a homemaker, someone that's making a home for us, and my helpmeet I would have been help. I would have never done anything in my life of any significance. I've had restaurants in the past. She would decorate them, help me with the layout of things and menus and details and what we should have. And I did most of the work of it because she's there with the littles, but she was totally engaged in it. And without her help, I would have been a failure. When I was in politics, she was the greatest campaign manager ever. When I made the film, she was the one calling up, getting the interviews of all the top people with her sweet voice and, you know, and everything, just working it out with her. Oh, sure, we'll give you the interview and stuff. So it's the world wants to steal the energies of her life, and they want to profit from it. God said, no, I want the family to profit from all her abilities and talents and the things she's capable of, and whatever you're doing in life, whatever the man's doing, the woman can be a great helpmeet, and she's designed to do that. Unlike most men like myself, we're so single-minded, we have a hard time doing more than one thing at a time. My wife can do 15 things at the same time and keep track of them all and do a better job than I would do. But then her doing that for me all of a sudden puts me up, or people go, man, you're a pretty successful guy or whatever. I'm realizing, oh, if you only knew. But it's from that, and that she has the blessing of seeing, I know I was a part of everything he did. When I was a representative, she knew I'm part of that. I've been praying for him. I've been encouraging him to stand up and try to get in these positions because Christian men need to be there. I've been, you know, with the kids going door to door for him for campaigning. And so it just builds the family. And that, what you were talking about a little earlier, that's the thing they're against. They want to divide and conquer everyone. So yeah, they want to get the woman out there doing her own job, earning her own money, and the man doing the same thing. Why? So they're divided, so they can conquer them. They want the parents too busy to raise the kids, so the school systems do it, so they can divide the children from the parents. They want the blacks against the whites, and they'll tell each group, oh, they're against you or whatever. And they want the rich against the poor. They want all the divisions they can create in society, the more the merrier, because then it gives them all these individual groups that they can customize their propaganda for, to utilize their energies to get them to work toward their goals while naively thinking, no, we're trying to save the planet, where they realize, how stupid, this is all nonsense. And the people in charge know it's all nonsense. But if we can harness their energies, we're going to be able to make the cost of energy skyrocket, which will impoverish everyone. A lot of people listening, you might, if you haven't studied this, go, why would they want to do that? Because the poorer you are, the more you need them, and the more you need a check from the government. And they know once they get their hooks in you, then you have to vote for them forever because you need the check. Even if you hate them, I got to vote for them because the people that are for big government want to keep giving me my check, and the other people for limited government don't, so I have to vote that way. And that's the whole game. All it's been about is to enslave the people in entitlements and dependencies, break apart the family so the kids are being raised by the state and the single mom's trying to do everything, which they cannot do. The sweetest, most wonderful woman in the world cannot be the mother and the father. They know that. All statistics show that. And so it was this purposeful attack and war against the family structure. And Lucifer, who's the commander in chief of the other side, he knew what the family was supposed to be like. And he knew he would be very unsuccessful in destroying and seeking to, you know, fragment everything if the families were strong. So it's been under battle since the Garden of Eden, but that's what we're in the midst of.
Yeah, and I can say without a shadow of a doubt, when my wife and I were both working in the workforce, we each made probably about $60,000 or $70,000 a year. And when my wife came home to care for the home and the children, I successfully doubled my income a couple times. And then 11 years ago, we kind of had to reboot. We moved to an area where we didn't know anybody and didn't have any particular opportunities lined out. And once again, was able to start something and build it and grow it to exponentially provide for my wife, to the point where, you know, another paradigm that changed for us when it comes to this whole communist model, like the Weimar Republic concept of retirement, you know, and saving for retirement. And so you save this money, you put it in the stock market, you know, and you put your future into the hands of BlackRock, Blackstone, State Street, and Vanguard. You allow them to gobble up the corporations of the world and make them monolithic. We changed our paradigm and thought about, you know, obviously, I don't think I'll ever retire. That means to basically kind of go to sleep for the last time. I don't imagine that I'll ever retire. But what if we could build a living legacy where we could buy property and accumulate infrastructure and different things, where we could pass in our lifetime, we could pass a legacy to our children, provide them with a piece of land, provide them with financing where they could build a home, and we could rebuild this kind of old order type of idea of the family unit where, Johnny goes off to college, gets an education, and then he flies to New York City because that's where the high paying jobs are and that's where all the excitement is. But instead of that, what if we provide you with an opportunity? Hey, son, here's a piece of dirt, you know, and I'll help you finance it so that you can build your home here. We can develop some businesses and some ideas, and you can continue to do that, like while we're alive, not like put all this money in a can, right, and bury the can, and then when we croak, you know, you'll get this money that you didn't earn, and then you'll try to have to figure out what you're going to do with it. And, you know, the family's all fractured and we're scattered all over the country. And, you know, 11 years ago, we had this idea. And now my oldest son, he just got married last year. He's 20. And he's building his home on the property next door. And, you know, I'm helping him finance all that and do all those things. And, you know, it's a very modern day. It's an incredibly foreign concept. But 100 years ago, it was the way that everybody did it.
That's right. No, it's we're doing about exactly what you're doing. All my 9 children, half of them are married. They all still live right around us in the little town we're in because we valued family, not money. That's the key, is the counterfeit. Satan wants us to think money will make us happy, when God tells us, no, that's the most worthless thing in my economy. Of course, you need some to get by, but family is joy and happiness and just fun of being around, especially as your kids get older. And then you have these relationships with them. You don't have to tell them everything to do anymore. They're just, you just enjoy them, and then you enjoy their children. And it's the way God intended things to be. But back when you were first talking in that section, I looked back through all my tax returns, because people always told us, you can't make it on one income. We decided the day we got married, she was never going to work, even before we had kids, because we didn't want to get dependent on it. It scared us. Well, then you can't. We saw too many friends where they planned to be home with the kids, but then they couldn't. We just can't. We have too many bills. So we're like, we're never going to do that. You can volunteer for groups, old folks' homes and different things she worked at and ministries, but we don't want you to earn any money, even though it's going to be really tight at first. But I just want us to never get, you know, enslaved in that. But I look back through when God finally blessed us with one child and then two, and slowly I look at my tax returns and I'm just doing my business. She is helping me. But yeah, just every time we had a child, just bumped up, you know, 20% what you're making, the next child, 20%. It just kept going up and up and up, because he knew you need to take care of them. And you can trust in people that think you can't afford the next child. I'm telling you, if you're providing for yourself, maybe you can't, but if God is your provider, you can. He would never give you a child and then not give you the means of taking care of that child. And maybe you have to cut some extra cars or nicer cars or just stuff. But I promise you, a little baby, that says, "Daddy, I love you," and stuff, is the value of that is 1,000 times anything this world has to offer. And if you have to live in modest means and a thrifty life, but you have these close, loving relationships, you'll be the happiest and richest man on the planet with what just God gives you inside of your family. There's nothing like it. It's the closest thing to heaven that we'll ever have on this earth. A healthy, strong, loving family is as good as it can possibly get, but Satan's telling you, no, the brand new SUV is good, as good as it gets, even though in a year or so it's out of date and they got a new model and you're old news. And it's this rat race, because here's why they want us all in the rat race. Because the most precious thing God has given us of all the things he's given us is our time. And yet we don't know how much is left. And Satan knows, if I can get people, especially people that are truly Christians and born again, to waste their time chasing the things of the world, where they're not influencing others, they're not influencing their own children or grandchildren or their neighbors, or then that's as successful as I can be. I can't get them into hell where I want them because they've been saved, but I can waste the time and lie to them that, oh, this is what they need. And so then all of a sudden on the day we die, whenever it may be, and we don't know when, we'll realize when we stand before God, oh my goodness, here's how many years he gave me. What did I do? We will have to give an account. We don't have to pay for our sins, but he'll say, what did you do as a steward of what I gave you? And I think as we see our life go into the furnace, many of us are going to go, oh my goodness, I wasted so much time on nothingness. And then, but we'll also see the time we didn't do that, where we are investing in our children, building relationships, loving on them, enjoying them like God intended us to enjoy them, playing games and reading books and taking walks and everything. We'll go, he will not only will we be grateful for that, but he will then say, here's your reward for doing the things I wanted you to do, that I put you on the earth to do. So we need to try to keep an eternal perspective, especially about family, because this is a long game. Family is the long game. My hope and prayer is that as he multiplies my children out generation after generation, 100 years from now, when I've been gone for 80, 90 years, whatever, I'll have 1,000 times the influence I do today because I invested in the things God said were worth investing in, the children and the grandchildren and the people around me. And I'm glad to hear what you're doing, because it sounds exactly like what we're doing. And it's so such a wonderful plan.
It's funny how you mentioned the rat race, because my first out of college, my first 11 years, I was a financial planner. And when, as God would have it, I was kind of forced out of that position. But before I was forced out, I was like, you know, the thing about the rat race is if you win, you're still a rat. And like I was looking to get out of the rat race, and then God intervened and kind of pushed me out of the rat race. And it's been nothing but a blessing. And by spending that extra time with the family and doing all those things and interacting with them, that's how we instill virtues and values and biblical ideas and build that biblical foundation, is by being around and being able to talk with them. And now my three oldest boys have a little handyman business. Well, it started out as a little handyman business. And over the last 3 years, they have developed it. And it's so great. You know, while I'm out doing my job and different things, they'll be texting me, "Hey dad, what do you think about this? What should we do here?" Or, "Hey, check this out. We just built this," you know, and I'm there to counsel them, to as a sounding board. They can bounce stuff off of me. And because of that, they're more successful, you know, and I'm there to participate in all that and talk about rewarding. I mean, it's so incredibly rewarding. And the bottom line is God is true. You know, God is true. His word is true. And God is faithful, and he will reward you for just being faithful and consistent and not wavering, not succumbing to whether it's peer pressure or even now. I mean, it's so wild to think all this theological pressure from all these different ideas that come from the Frankfurt School, you know, liberation theology and critical theory, critical text theory, critical race theory. It all stems from the Frankfurt School. I mean, if you go back prior to the 30s and you start looking at the Academy and all these guys that were analyzing the text and they were looking for the historical Jesus. Well, if we can re-explain who Jesus was, you know, we can rewrite history, and we can actually change biblical history and conform it into this postmodern image of, you know, now where you don't, I mean, there was a time where women were identified as the opposite sex, you know? And so if women were the opposite sex, there wouldn't be all this gender, you know, confusion and ideology, because they were the opposite sex. Now, that doesn't sound empowering, but when you are fulfilling your role in the family and in society, you know, you were talking about that. Now, I'm blown away, one, by how many women I have to interact with in the construction world. And what's more fascinating to that is to hear these women curse. Like no man. I mean, I've been in construction quite a while now, for the last 20 plus years. And I hear these women curse, and, you know, all the ink and everything. And it's unreal. But, you know, society has been deconstructed, and men and women have been rebuilt into the, men are effeminate, you know, men are effeminate, weak and docile through the bread and circuses, through the sports ball and all these different things. And they're submissive, and it's the exact opposite. It's the exact opposite of who they were designed to be and what they were called to do. And in the exact same vein, you know, women are loud and foul and it's just so unreal. And how that becomes attractive, or how that becomes like an end game idea of like, yeah, that's who I want to be. I mean, I want to compete with men. There's no difference. There's, in my opinion, and from my experience, there's no difference with women competing with men in the workforce than women competing with men on any type of sports, whether, you know, whether it's wrestling or whatever it is. I mean, and that's how we got there. We got there because Rosie the Riveter was glamorized, and, you know, she's got her jeans on and she's making her muscle and she's helping us fight the Nazis and all this stuff. And the next thing you know, you got a guy boxing a woman and breaking her face. You know, it's unbelievable.
It is. No, it's just been a complete perversion of everything God intended to be a certain way. If a man's supposed to be strong and gentle and leading, then Satan wants to make him effeminate, afraid, and hiding behind his wife. And if a woman's supposed to be beautiful and feminine and just sweet, then he wants her rough and ugly. And, you know, even the styles and the short hair where it looks like a man's, it's just rebellion. A lot of people doing that, they don't understand that's what's being pushed on them at all. I know that. I feel heartbroken for somebody. I'll see him and I'm like, oh, sweetie, you're supposed to be this beautiful feminine lady that doesn't have the stress of paying the bills and all that stuff. That's your husband's job. Let him go worry about that. You go relax and invite ladies over to have a Bible study in your home during the day and make sweet things to eat. Talk about ways you can better raise your children and train them and teach them. You're not supposed to have this pressure on you of that. We're completely designed so differently. And then, yeah, the athletic thing's just absolute nonsense. Showing how far back this goes, you reminded me when you were talking. In 1991, I was getting a master's degree at University of Colorado, which is a very liberal school. I was able to take one elective for the master's degree, and I looked around, and there was a sports physiology class, and I always loved athletics, played college sports and everything. And so I thought, oh, I'll take that, just whatever, easy class. The first session of the first day, the first part of the class, I'll never forget this. The man walked up to the mic, introduced himself, and then he said this statement. This is word for word what he said. This shows 34, almost 35 years ago in our educational system, this indoctrination was just pounding down on the young people. He said, the only reason the NFL is not all women is because they grew up playing with Barbie dolls instead of footballs. That's an exact word-for-word quote. And I realized, oh, my word. And I cut that class. I went right after the class, canceled it, and switched to something. I was like, I cannot sit through a semester of that kind of foolish chatter. But that's word for word what he said 35 years ago in our government school system. That's the poison that has penetrated the system of these wicked people just lying and spewing these lies out. And as I looked around the classes, so many of those classes I took there to get that master's were just radical liberal. Now everyone else is taking, I look around, they're taking notes on that. Oh, NFL, all women. If you know, and I was like going, and I'm just a young man, but I'm like going, you got to be kidding. You would hear something like that, not just laugh in his face, but they wouldn't because they've been in this system their whole life since they were 3 years old in pre-K. And they've learned just shut up and do as you are told and don't ruffle the feathers or you'll be mocked by the pure pressure of the system. A lot of people don't know this, but our entire system today, the age-segregated peer grouping, where your whole life is spent with people exactly your age. Karl Marx is the one that came up with that because he said that's the only way we could customize the propaganda, where if it's all five-year-olds in the class, then we could totally brainwash them and no one will notice. That's why the one-room schoolhouse had to go and John Dewey got rid of that because they said you cannot propagandize young people if there's different ages in the class because the old ones will see what you're doing and then you'll be exposed. So that's when they went age segregated peer grouping on everything. It also what it does, so when you're 11, you're only around 11-year-olds. What does that mean? You're around just fools like yourself. No one knows more than you do. So it keeps you totally ignorant and it keeps you totally dependent on the teacher because there's no one else you're getting information or knowledge from. And you are so used to that system and comfortable with it, you're not even comfortable talking to someone that's just one grade up or down. Go, they're not in my class. And it's such a division, but that's another part of their division plan where they go, we're just going to divide everybody out to their own age bracket. And they're going to have been with their age bracket since they're three all the way through college. So they just are uncomfortable. And I know you've probably had this experience. I love young people. So I always go up and try to talk to them at church or where at the park or wherever. Hey, what's going on? What are you interested in? What are you doing with your life? And young people in the last 20 years have been so hard to talk to because they can't even look at you because I'm like, well, you're an older man. They don't even know how to relate because they're used to, they're 18 and they're used to 18-year-olds and nobody else. So if you're 50 and you come up and talk to them, they're like, oh, they feel uncomfortable. But that was purposeful. They didn't want them to be able to listen to me and be able to impart wisdom to them or a good instruction or influence or, you know, motivation, inspire them what they could do with their life. So it's that's another level of this infiltration was to divide the wisdom, the wise from the fools. That's why we have the old folks' homes. Get those old people out of here. We don't want them around anybody because they're finally wise. And they might influence people. Just go, yeah, go have a nice life in the old folks' home. But that's what's happened at every level because they didn't want us to be wise, of course. Because when you're wise, you can see instantly and discern instantly everything they're selling us is a complete and total lie.
Yeah, and we as husbands, you know, we're commanded to dwell with them according to knowledge. You know, we're required to teach our wives. And so, and the main reason Christian men aren't teaching their wives is because they don't even know, because they're not, you know, they're so distracted with either what's going on or whatever the entertainment is that they're escaping through, that they're not taking the time to study so that they can know, so that they can, one, dwell with them according to knowledge and teach them. Because if husbands were doing this and they were able to teach their wives, then their wives wouldn't be. I mean, you know, this has been the end game since the garden. You know, Eve was deceived, right? And that's how it happened. You know, she didn't consult her husband. And, you know, and when you say something like that in 2025, the the hairs on the back of everybody's neck stands up because you're this patriarchal misogynist. But this is objectively true. We can look through history. We can watch this. We can trace, just like your documentary does, we can trace this right through history, where it came from, what it was like before that, you know, and, you know, we're just watching it unfold. And, you know, that's why I wanted to have you on. This is a valuable discussion. And I realize that there is massive cognitive dissonance. Like, you have been programmed and you have been brainwashed to accept all of this Age of Aquarius. I Google the Age of Aquarius and, you know, and maybe I don't quite know all the lyrics to that song or whatever, but the entire concept is this New Age concept where everybody, men and women, will all be exactly the same. And I mean, we're experiencing that in America right now. You know, we're experiencing.
You know, absolutely. Yeah. And one thing I want to bring up, just, and then you can continue on, but what you said about Eve, it's a very key point that, and women need to listen to this and men need to listen to this. We see there in the Garden of Eden, they were both perfect. Sin had not entered in yet. So Eve was completely perfect. She did not have a sin nature. She wasn't prone to sin or anything. And the first liar that came along, she believed him. But here's what you have to understand. When I studied that, I thought, wait a minute. That shows that's not a flaw in women. That's the way they were designed. That's why they need a father when they're a little girl, because they're designed to trust and believe. And that's why we love women. They're so trusting. They're so supportive. They're so believe you can do it. Even if you, everyone else would go, buddy, you don't have a chance at that. But your wife goes, oh, yes, you can, sweetie. I mean, that's why we love women. But that's how you were designed. It's not a flaw. Because Eve had that when she was perfect. The first person that came along and sounded like it sounded good, she believed it, even though it was a bold-faced lie. And I thought, wow, that's so important for women to understand. So you realize that's why I need to listen to my father when I'm growing up. And when I get older, I need to talk to my husband about everything, because I'm going to be prone to listen to something. And when it sounds good but might not be good, I might be prone to believe it. And I don't want to believe in a lie like Eve did. And then men realize the responsibility. I need to protect my sweet wife from the lies the world is sending to her every second of every day. Oh, come out and commit adultery. You'll have so much fun. You're missing out. Come out here. I mean, the world is after the women. Just like in the Garden of Eden, Eve didn't mess with the man. He said, I can see she's the weaker vessel. She is more fragile in a way, and I'm going to prey on that. And he was successful. And so the world, I think, has gone back to that. Now, I see the whole battle in our culture, and of course, it's against men too, but it is really lying to the women right now. They want to pull them out because they know they're so easy to use and abuse, and they're so much a woman, a lady, that it destroys them when you do that too, when their heart's broken, when they've done things they shouldn't have done because they were sucked into it because of a lie. It just decimates who they are, and Satan wants to destroy. He came to kill, steal, and destroy, and nothing else. So everything you see in the culture that where things are dying, being destroyed, or stolen, or robbed from people, you know, oh, that's Lucifer at work right there. That's his gift and his only gift. And so anyway, I just wanted to hit on that. So you men, you can't let your wife be reading the novels that have lies perpetrated to her, or watching movies. And none of us should be watching things where the storyline is a lie. The narrative is glorifying sin. Oh, it was a really great movie. No, it's not a great movie. Or a movie that's blaspheming God in it. I don't care if it's the greatest storyline ever, but they do that. You should not sit there. You should stand up and walk out and say, I will not sit in the presence of someone blaspheming my Savior. We got to start standing up and being men and courageous and being just violently opposed to what is evil. The Bible tells us the beginning of wisdom is when you hate what is evil, because you fear God, and to fear God is to hate what is evil. And so, but women need to be cherished, protected, nourished, loved, treasured. And the men have to do that, or it will not get done.
Yeah. And that's why God promised the curse that God said would come on a country, he said, children are their oppressors and women rule over them. All you have to do is look at the current list of people that are in Congress. I don't know what the percentage is now, but people want to like scoff and mock people like AOC and Nancy Pelosi and say how they say dumb things and different things. But this is the fruit of this agenda. It's the, and it is the promise of God that if you blaspheme him, just like I was saying about keepers at home, that the word of God be not blasphemed. When you blaspheme him with your life, children are your oppressors and women rule over you. And that is where we are. That's where we've been for quite a while now. And, you know, this is just, the Bible's true. All this is more proof that the Bible's absolutely true. And it's certainly not some kind of control mechanism. It's a book of wisdom. And if you read it and study it and understand it, you will be incredibly blessed by it, and you will be multiplied by it, and you as a man will be able to protect your wife and to protect your children by giving them godly counsel and directing them and leading them and guiding them. And guess what? You're not always going to be right, you know, and you're going to make wrong decisions, but you might make a wrong decision, but then you can make it right. You know, God gives you the ability to say, you know what? I'm sorry. You know what? I made a bad decision. That's good leadership. I made a bad decision. I made a wrong decision. But instead of just going the wrong direction, now we're going to make it right. We're going to change. We're going to stand. We're going to violently, radically oppose this present facade of what the world is presenting as, I don't know, normal, for lack of a better word. Because, yeah. You know, and that's why I greatly appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate your message. I appreciate the way in which you present it. And, you know, I just appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on and talking about these things. They're so important. And people at home listening, be encouraged. Wherever you are, you can start right there. Maybe you go, oh, that vision sounds wonderful, but we're both working right now, or we're both, that's okay. So you get a plan, you lay out a vision. Okay, maybe over the next 6 months, you could be able to quit. We could downsize. We could, if we needed to cut things back, especially things that are unnecessary. A lot of people don't realize how much money you spend to have two cars, to go to two different jobs, and all the clothes and all the daycare if you have children, all this stuff. You realize you're not making anything. You're just paying for that to happen. That's all the money's coming to that. If you weren't doing that, you wouldn't have any of those bills hardly. Moving out a little bit of the city where it's a little less expensive. It's a little more of a rural setting, a great place to homeschool your children. It's the greatest single thing we've ever done in my family is homeschooling the kids. It gives you the time to build the relationship where then you get the fun and the enjoyment of having the influence, but having the closeness. My 10 best friends are my wife and my 9 children. I have other guy friends that are great and stuff, but they don't even scratch the surface compared to my family because the time we got together, because they've been with us, you know, every day of their life till they're 18, 19, 20, whatever. Some of them have stayed home even before they got married and while they're starting businesses and stuff. I'm saying, you're always welcome here. If you're doing what's right and living right, we love being around you. You can stay here until the day you get married. Great, no problem. And most of them have done that. And so we've even had the joy of when they're starting to get on their own, do their own thing, but they still come home at night and sleep and tell us about what they were doing and the business they're starting and how things are going. And it's just, it's so fulfilling and so blessed. And it's the way I can just feel it's the way God intended things to be.
Well, every guest on the Fearless podcast gets a gift. And so I wanted to ask you, Curtis, do you drink coffee?
Yes.
You're a coffee drinker. Okay. So we have our own coffee line. And so we have Whole or Ground, we have light, medium, dark roast, and then we have what's called a white roast, which is a first crack coffee that's very good. It's very unique. But I didn't know what you would prefer as far as a coffee when it comes to your roast? What do you normally drink, Curtis?
I like the lighter, medium, okay. More in general, the lighter ones, yeah.
Great.
So, but that white one sounds neat, whatever that is. I'm happy to try whatever, and that's very kind of you.
Yeah, I'll get that out to you. This has been an awesome interview. This episode is brought to you by thetexasboys.com. So if you want to support us, go over to thetexasboys.com. If you're looking for tea, coffee, honey, anything like that, we do sell our beef locally. We currently have a half a cow available. Send us an email over there. Closing, Curtis, is there anything that you want to say in closing?
Yes. If you're interested in watching the movies, you can go to, of course, Amazon. The first one's titled Agenda Grinding America Down, and the second one's Agenda 2, Masters of Deceit. Or you can go to our website, agendadocumentary.com, if you want a physical copy so you can have showings in your home and at your church and stuff. And then agendaweekly.com is our newsletter subscription format thing. It's $5 a month, but we send you a newsletter every week with the videos and the prayer and action items and everything. That kind of supports us. So that's why I'm bringing that up. But I just want to encourage you that doing things God's way reaps so many blessings in so many different areas. Sometimes you don't realize it's all from doing that. But I want to encourage you, don't do what everybody else is doing. Dig into that Bible and see, how did God design the marital relationship to be? We want ours as close to that as possible. And the parent-child relationship. And how are you supposed to be treating your neighbor or those people at church? Or if you're the employer, how should you be treating your employees? It's all in there. The key to financial success of being thrifty and doing things God's way and tithing, and just so he will bless the things that you're doing. But I want to encourage you right now, with millions of people waking up all over America. Ever since COVID, it kind of woke up another whole wave of people because they realized they'd been lied to. And more lies are being revealed every day. But I want to encourage you, be out there speaking the truth, be studying so you understand the truth, and just pray that God blesses our little loaves and fishes as we give those to him and say, would you bless my efforts to make a difference right where we are? And if you're a Christian, sharing the gospel with people, sweetly, kindly, but telling them the good news, because people are looking for the truth right now. So many people, and we know what that is. And so I just encourage you to be faithful, and that we'll all be glad that we did for all eternity. So, but thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Curtis. And we will see y'all on the next show.